Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 The Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, you're going to make it happen.
And Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago, following all 82 Bulls games this season. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_Peck. You can follow my co-host, Jordan Malley, at Jordan C. Malley. And you can follow us at Locked On Bulls. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Shoot us an email, LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. And of course, our text and voicemail line, always there for you, our fellow Bulls fans, 331-979-1369. That number again, 331-979-1369. Send us your texts and your voicemails with all of your thoughts, questions, comments concerning our beloved Bulls. Here with you on Monday morning, Jordan off for now. Hopefully, Jordan and I will be able to get as much Bulls content to you, our fellow Bulls fans, during this holiday week. We didn't do any mailbag last week, kind of a crazy week schedule-wise, so I will be taking as many text messages as I can on today's episode. Hopefully at some point later in the week, Jordan and or I can get to some of the voicemails. I know that we have a bunch of fresh voicemails in our inbox to get to as well. And, you know, hopefully we'll see the Bulls get their first three-game winning streak when they finish their road trip tonight against the Orlando Magic. If the Bulls do that and get their first three-game winning streak, they will actually find themselves by the slimmest of margins in the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference. How about that? Honestly, not, you know me, everything with a grain of salt. I'm not impressed by unimpressive wins. It was cool to see the Bulls get a come-from-behind victory in that fashion against the Wizards, but personally, I thought it was kind of embarrassing that they needed such dramatic fourth-quarter comeback to get a win against a team that bad. And they beat the Pistons for the third time this season, 3-0 against Detroit, but that was a Pistons team playing with no Blake Griffin and also no Derrick Rose, who was really shine for them. Who is actually leading the NBA in points per game for bench players so far this season. So kudos to Zach LaVine, who has been playing well in their win over Washington. Lauri Markkanen certainly looked good, although he kind of had another down performance on Saturday night. But hey, two wins in a row. I mean, I guess you can take what you can get at this point. So with that, let us get to our inbox, which is flooded with your text messages, starting with this one from Brandon in the suburbs. Brandon says, I'll admit it, I was duped. I was pleasantly surprised by the Clippers' win, and despite them not having a few important players, allowed myself to buy into the turning point game as hope for the rest of the Bulls season. Then when they came out and blasted the Thunder for 2.5 quarters, I bought in even more. What the hell is wrong with this team? In all seriousness, what stats or analytics can you guys share about how bad or unlucky the Bulls have been in fourth quarters this year? And where do you place the blame for closing games, coaches or players? Lastly, Jason Garrett has become known in sports circles as the clapper, who does a lot of clapping without being an actually good coach. Can we admit he has passed that torch to Boylan, clapping constantly without being a good coach? Well, I don't know if Jason Garrett is ready to pass that torch because, man, his Cowboys, that NFC East division title is just up for grabs and nobody wants it. Cowboys fans just, I mean, you know, my boy John from Bulls Outsiders is a Cowboys fan in addition to being a split Bulls and Mavs fan because of his Dallas roots. Can't imagine how pissed off he and some of his fellow Cowboys fans after their game yesterday. Look, I mean, I think it's true that Jim Boylan does a lot more clapping than coaching. And I think for that reason, a lot of Bulls fans are sitting here, you know, not quite at the midway point of a season, wondering how exactly the Bulls deemed him to be worthy of that extension this past offseason. I think it's fair to wonder that. So as far as these, you know, collapses that the Bulls have been dealing with in the fourth quarters of games, and yes, we did actually finally, for the first time, see a turnaround where they had a huge deficit late in a game. They were down, you know, 18 or whatever, with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter of that comeback win. And it was nice to see them actually put together a strong fourth quarter where they were the ones making the comeback. I guess you could also say they did a little bit of that in Zach LaVine's epic game against Charlotte from a couple weeks ago. But for the most part, it's been the Bulls collapsing in the fourth quarter, coughing up leads in the fourth quarter. It's been happening countless times this season in winnable games. And it is perhaps the most frustrating part of this season, I would say, along with the shockingly bad regression from Lauri Markkanen, who, thank God, has finally at least looked like he's starting to turn a corner. The fourth quarter collapses are the most frustrating and most maddening part of this season to me. And as far as the coaching or the players, and where do you put the blame, and is it stats, is it analytics, is it bad luck? I mean, look, you can argue that as a young team with not a whole lot of stars on it, the Bulls have not gotten a whole lot of help from officials late in close games. And I know in particular, you know, the loss to the Thunder was one where there were a couple of questionable calls, the jump ball between Wendell and Steven Adams, Chris Paul getting away with what looked like a travel late in the game and being granted a timeout. But in the grand scheme, to me, you can't blame the officiating and quote-unquote bad luck when it comes to watching the Bulls fail to execute down the stretch. To me, they are a team that, to their credit, has played some pretty solid defense so far this season, but they still get in trouble late in games when teams adjust to what they're doing. And you saw a very high IQ basketball player by the name of Chris Paul pick them apart in the fourth quarter of that game where they coughed up that big lead to the Thunder. So, to me, between that and the lack of execution offensively, because what we saw in the first half of that game against OKC was some of the most competent offensive basketball Bulls fans have watched all season. We were sitting there saying, oh my gosh, this is what this team is capable of offensively. Why the hell are we the 29th ranked offensive rating team in the NBA when this is what we are capable of? And, you know, you also have to sit there and watch them put forth just pitiful performances where they're struggling to score. They've got 75 points midway through the fourth quarter against the Wizards, who are the worst defensive team in the league. How can it be that bad sometimes offensively? It comes down to a lack of execution. This system, and it's something that John Paxson talked about when he finally came out of hiding and spoke to the media and gave one-on-one interviews with select Bulls beat writers and was asked about what's gone wrong and what's disappointed him about the season, is the new system that Jim Boylan installed offensively and it taking longer than he anticipated, and that being a miscalculation when it comes to getting this young group of players to play it effectively, consistently. Because in the fourth quarter of many of these games where the Bulls cough up leads, they just go from executing an offense to not at all executing an offense. The ball stops moving. Players stop moving off the ball, and the Bulls are forced to take bad shots. And while we have seen some beautiful moments of Zach LaVine hero ball this season, there are many of you out there in Bulls Nation who are frustrated and still don't believe in Zach LaVine being quite good enough to be a hero ball guy who's reliable. And I completely hear you, and I think it's a valid concern. And to me, I mean, you can say, yes, some of this is on the players. Young, inexperienced, closing out games isn't easy, and young teams really tend to struggle with that. Closing games by executing, continuing to play smart basketball in those crunch time moments. But it, to me, is also a very obvious sign that when you look at what the Bulls have done this season, and I haven't checked these numbers super recently, but not that long ago, and it still holds true the last time I checked, like, you know, 5 or 6 days ago, that The Bulls' rating, net rating, combining their offense and defense, gets progressively worse by quarter. First, second, third, and fourth. And Bulls fans have to sit there after losses and listen to Jim Boylan talk about winning first quarters. Turns out fourth quarters are a bit more important. And to me, yes, it's a young team. Yes, we've seen some head scratching and bad performances from these young players late in games. But to me, it's more on coaching. If as you progress through a 48-minute basketball game, by each 12-minute phase, you get worse. To me, that is a lack of making in-game adjustments. That is your opponent out-adjusting you to get the best of you as the game progresses. And to me, that is a direct point of a finger at the coach and the coach's chair. Thanks for checking in, Brandon. This one comes to us from the 808. Hey, Matt and Jordan, I was listening to the Zach Lowe podcast recently, and they were discussing trading Marcus Morris for Patrick Patterson, Mo Harkless, and a first-round pick. Does Thaddeus Young have the same value as Marcus Morris? The Bulls will benefit greatly from finding a true backup power forward in Patterson and small forward in Mo Harkless and another first-round pick. Thanks for checking in. I did listen to this episode of the Low Post. I know what you're talking about. And it's an intriguing idea. And as of right now, Morris and Thad are on similar deals. You know, Thad's is a multi-year deal, whereas Marcus Morris just signed that one-year deal with the Knicks. But I believe they're within, you know, $2 or $3 million of each other for their salaries this season. As for the equal talent going in either direction for this particular hypothetical trade, I don't disagree that Patterson and Mo Harkless are both nice depth pieces for a quality team. But to me, the throwing a pick in is where you lose me. Because, I mean, financially speaking, contractually speaking, you put Thad Young instead of Marcus Morris in this hypothetical in the trade machine, and the trade works. But I don't know. Pardon me. I don't know that the Clippers would look at this trade and say Thad Young is worth giving up those two pieces and a pick. And yeah, that Clippers pick is going to be a very late pick given how strongly they're performing this season. But even still, a first-round pick is a first-round pick. And Thad Young's underwhelming performance this season, you know, you can blame some of it on the lack of minutes and the inconsistency of where he is in Jim Boylan's rotation, but it's also true that he's just not playing all that well. And the Clippers already have the, you know, valuable, like, veteran role player pieces. They already have plenty of veteran leadership. They have a roster full of them. Paul George, yes, has never been to the mountaintop, but he's a veteran all-star who has a lot of deep playoff runs under his belt. Kawhi Leonard, obviously, a two-time NBA champion, a two-time finals MVP, and they have Patrick Beverley, they have Lou Williams, they have all this veteran talent. I don't see the Clippers as a team looking at Thad Young and saying, that's a piece we need, and that's a piece that we're willing to give a pick for. Sadly, I just don't see that. Just a quick reminder before we continue on with our mailbag content that the original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/lockednba and using LockedNBA at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. If you can't visit Casper right now, you can find this offer and all of our other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcasts.com/offers. While we're on that train of thought, there is another texter asking about a hypothetical trade. This one comes to us from the 312. What's up, guys? I had a quick question. What if we traded Sato and Thad for Jrue Holiday? I really don't want to give up on Thad. Mostly, I think Sato is good, but he needs to be around a better cast of players for him to be fully effective, and we don't have that right now. With us needing a veteran who can actually play at a high level, I think it would be a good trade for both teams. What do you guys think? Thanks for the question. I agree with your point about Sato, and I would also say that it applies to Thad Young as well. They're quality role players for supporting roles on good teams. Sadly, right now, the Bulls are not a good team. And when you are demanding that role players perform at the level of a high-caliber starter, in Sato's case, or, you know, a high-caliber, you know, key reserve in Thad Young's case, they tend to not be as impressive because they don't have quality players around them that make them look good and allow them to be the best versions of themselves on a basketball court. So I very much agree with that point that you made, because the Bulls don't have that cast of characters to make players like Sato and like Thad better. So this hypothetical of Sato and Thad for Jrue Holiday, first off, does work contractually. Jrue Holiday this year making just over $26 million. Thad Young and Sato combined about not quite $23 million. So that money-wise does work. I know that the Pelicans are disappointed with the way that their season has started. A lot of people had them as a sneaky, you know, potential 7th or 8th seed in a very stacked Western Conference because of all the offseason moves they made, and not, of course, just the addition of number one overall pick Zion Williamson, but the other ways that they added talent to this roster in the offseason, including some pretty savvy free agent moves. And of course, you know, Jrue Holiday, yeah, he's on a big contract, but he's a quality, trusted veteran. You know, 10 years experience in the league. He's a good player. He's a smart player. And I think that the people thought, because of all this talent that the Pelicans added, you know, combining that with the AD trade, the, you know, adding pieces like Ingram and Lonzo, that they'd be better than they are. And, you know, I saw something like just the other day, it's a column talking about maybe Alvin Gentry getting the boot because the Pelicans are so dissatisfied with where they are right now. And maybe they, like the Bulls, another team disappointed based on, you know, the goals they set for themselves at the beginning of the season, are looking to make a change. And maybe it's trading a player instead of firing the coach. I really like Jrue Holiday, and I think that he could really help this team. I like this hypothetical more than Bulls fans who want us to go and get Chris Paul, especially after he cooked us last week, because, you know, that Chris Paul contract to me is still just horrifying. And I really don't like Chris Paul. I respect his game. I mean, I respect his skill and his basketball IQ, but there are parts of his game like the flopping and the whining and the dirty play that I don't like. I would much rather have Jrue Holiday. This texter from 312 says they don't want to give up on Thad yet. I would say I don't want to give up on Sato yet. Look, Thad is clearly unhappy with his role. He has not been playing well. And before I'm focusing on not giving up on Thad and making Thad a bigger part of this team, I feel like I'm, you know, beating a dead horse here, but developing Lowry and Wendell is more important. And I would even argue, based off of recent things that we've seen, seeing what you have and developing Daniel Gafford is more important. When it comes to who's getting front court minutes in the back half of this season, and that's regardless of whether the Bulls are trying to scrape into the 8th seed or shifting the focus and trying to really focus on development of this young roster to the back end of the season. The Bulls brought in Thad as a quality veteran. They want him to be, you know, a leader and show this young team how to win and, you know, build the right culture. But it doesn't seem to be a great fit so far. Satoransky, on the other hand, look, I know he's been underwhelming too so far. And I think Bulls fans, you know, some of them out there anyway, have been clamoring for him to be benched in favor of either Coby White, Denzel Valentine, who's been playing well recently. If you don't want to take Chris Dunn out of that starting lineup because of what he's been giving you on the defensive end. To me, we've seen a stretch of recent games from Sato that are much better, that show you what he can be. as a guy who's going to get you around 15 points, but he's also going to pull down six or seven rebounds and dish out, you know, six or seven assists, which is what I thought he would be when we signed him. A guy that doesn't need to pull focus from the offense, who can allow Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen to be your primary offensive pieces, and who just plays smart basketball. And I think it's taken a while for Satoransky to figure out where to pick and choose his spots to be aggressive offensively and where his teammates want the ball on the floor, where he can find some chemistry finding good looks for Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen when they are off the ball. So I really want to see Satoransky finish this season in a Bulls jersey, because I do still think that he might be a valuable piece worth keeping around. I'm not saying he's better than Jrue Holiday. He's clearly not better than Jrue Holiday. Which leads me to my last thought on that hypothetical, which is I don't think the Pelicans like this trade. Our texter thinks it's a good trade for both teams. You're getting off of Jrue Holiday's contract, which has, you know, him earning $25.4 million next season and a player option beyond that in 21-22 worth $26.3 million. So that's a lot of money, and maybe the Pelicans would like to move off of that while they are, you know, putting an emphasis on this younger core of players. But I also think the Pelicans value what Jrue Holiday brings to that young team. And I don't know that the Pelicans, you know, and I'm sorry to say, and it's the same thing I said about the other trade hypothetical involving a couple of those Clippers pieces and a first-round pick. You know, at some point, maybe we'll get a hypothetical trade where I think actually the other team involved in addition to the Bulls are not a team who says no. But I think this is another no. I don't see the Pelicans finding a fair deal here if we're sending them Thad Young and Satoransky and they're sending us Jrue Holiday. Collectively, the talent of Thad Young and Satoransky might get you close to what Jrue Holiday is. But when you're giving up the best player in a trade with all the collection of players involved in said trade, you want to walk away feeling like you got close to, if not equal value, collectively. And I don't see that. Jrue Holiday is in a different tier than Thad Young and Satoransky. I don't think their combined value is enough to counteract Pelicans maybe desiring to get off of Jrue Holiday's contract. But thanks for the question. And, you know, feel free to keep those trade hypotheticals coming. I know that it's certainly on the mind of Bulls fans in a disappointing season to try and shake things up. And we'll see. We are getting closer to that trade deadline, and we're in this crazy drought right now where we haven't had an NBA trade in forever and a half. So we'll see if anything happens over the next couple of weeks. Quick shout out to a couple of our other listeners texting in talking about their 2019 year on Spotify. Jose from Homewood, who listens to us and gave us the number 73,086 minutes spent listening to Locked On Bulls this year. That's insane. Says that he's a UPS driver and listens to us when he's driving around making deliveries. That's a lot of minutes. Appreciate it, Jose. Appreciate all of our listeners who have been texting us and telling us how much they've listened to us this year. Also, Trent from Melbourne, Australia, also recently texting us to let us know that he's been listening to Locked On Bulls all season long, all year long. Appreciate all of you tweeting at us and texting us to let us know that we have been entertaining you this year with our Bulls content. And I know even in tough seasons like last season and this season, it seems kind of silly to talk about this team 5 days a week, but that is this rabid fan base. We know how passionate y'all are. Jordan and I share that passion with you, and that's why we are here. That's why we do what we do, and that's why we so greatly appreciate every single one of our dedicated listeners out there. Y'all are the best, and we do it for you. So thanks for checking in and letting us know that you are out there listening. This one comes to us from the 702. This is an interesting one. Being realistic, where do you think we'll be today? Where do you think we'd be today as a team if we gave Jimmy the Supermax deal? This is a toughie because at the time of the Jimmy trade, I understood the position the Bulls were in, and I understood the decision they made. Yes, Jimmy Butler was an all-star caliber player. You could argue he was a top 20 player in the league. And it was frustrating to see the Bulls fail to build a proper roster around him. And the three alphas year was like the last straw, in my opinion, of this front office failing to put the right pieces around Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy and, you know, then coach Fred Hoiberg certainly had a personality clash. I think Jimmy had a certain lack of respect for Fred Hoiberg. But between the clash between coach and the coach's best player and the front office failing to give that coach the proper roster to coach the style of basketball he wanted to, and the team's best player not wanting to play the style of ball that the coach wanted to, it was a mess. And if they thought that they were going to be capped out at mediocrity, aka getting bounced in the first round, which is what happened, parentheses, what if Rondo didn't break his thumb? Stop. I understood at least the evaluation the Bulls made of where they were and the contract that they were facing, giving Jimmy that Supermax, which is why they decided to trade him and start over. And at the time, I was worried about the return in the trade. Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen. I liked the Markkanen pick. I thought Zach LaVine was a young, talented player, clearly a freakish athlete, but was, of course, worried about the ACL. And I liked Chris Dunn, but I, of course, had some concerns after a pretty underwhelming season when he didn't get that many opportunities in Minnesota. What we saw from Lauri Markkanen as a rookie, making an all-rookie squad, what we saw from Zach LaVine coming off of an ACL and looking like a brand-new player, a brand-new athlete, who's athleticism was getting stronger by each game when he came back and played, you know, the back end of that first season. And then what we saw from Lauri and Zach last season, even with the underwhelming performance of Chris Dunn last season, I was feeling okay about the Jimmy trade. Because I was starting to believe in at least Lauri and Zach being two solid pieces to build around. And Jimmy Butler, with all the miles on his legs from the Tibbs years, And a fat contract like that, I understood the decision the Bulls made. And I felt okay about it. I didn't feel great about it. I felt okay about it. But you see what Jimmy Butler is doing with this Miami Heat team. And credit to that organization for finding quality role players, which is something the Bulls can't appear to be able to do. But, I mean, you know, who would have thought, you know, Bam Adebayo was going to make such an amazing leap this season. Certainly a young, talented player with potential, but he's playing at close to an all-star level. And then these other random nobodies that they find, Kendrick Nunn and Duncan Robinson playing lights out. They have a solid group of role players around Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy Butler is playing like the all-star caliber player that we all know. And he has the Heat towards the top of the Eastern Conference because of it. And meanwhile, and for a multitude of reasons, after a promising season last year, not in wins, but at least in individual talents and performances, Lauri Markkanen has appeared to regress this season. Zach LaVine has strung together some solid performances recently, but he really struggled out of the gate this season. His numbers are down compared to last season. Chris Dunn playing better than he did last season, but the bar was set so freaking low, it's hard to feel great about that. The Bulls would have been strapped if they paid Jimmy that Supermax. And I understand them not wanting to be strapped and pay one player that huge percentage of their collective salary cap. But the other issue here is whether or not the Bulls are willing to be a luxury tax team. Because we rarely, if ever, see them do that. And the Reinsdorfs essentially hold the philosophy that they are willing to be a luxury tax team if it means having a team so talented that they are contending. Like, deep playoff run contending. I understand not wanting to pay a luxury tax for a team that's dog shit, that's struggling to win 30 games in a bad Eastern Conference. And maybe they thought that they didn't want to be a luxury tax team to try and build around Jimmy to be a team that gets bounced in the first round or maybe the second. But the real hypocrisy there that really pisses me off is that, you know, and it's not, it hasn't been confirmed, but it certainly is something that you would believe when you think about the Reinsdorfs and Jerry in particular and his whole, you know, like, basketball's a sport, baseball's a religion kind of shit that has Bulls fans, you know, infuriated. But the other comment that surfaced recently when Jerry was talking to a buddy of his and saying, you know, I always want my team to finish in second place. Keep the fan base wanting more. Keep them coming back for more. Don't satisfy them. Keep them hungry. Keep them wanting. And what is that philosophy about? It's about dollars. Bottom line, it's about dollars. So if the Bulls said, we don't believe we could build a real contender around Jimmy, thinking about that Supermax that they were facing, so we're going to tear it down and start over. Well, if your owner is pleased with being a mediocre or slightly above mediocre team that's finishing in second place in the division, getting to the first or maybe the second round of the playoffs, and that's his philosophy, and that's perfectly fine with him, sell some tickets to some playoff home games and, you know, do it again next year, well, then that's exactly the opposite of the reason they gave us for tearing it down and trading Jimmy. We don't want to settle for mediocrity. Parentheses, as long as we're making money, we're damn fine with mediocrity. And that, to me, is one of the biggest issues with this organization. Third largest market in the NBA, a team valued near somewhere around $3 billion, and they operate like a freaking mom-and-pop shop in, like, the 30th market, not the third. And Bulls fans are forced to sit here and watch what Jimmy's doing in Miami. Watch this team being led by a high school head coach who I think is significantly responsible for the regression of a lot of the young players on this roster. A front office who refuses to fire said coach because they know they would be admitting their own incompetence and their own failure by doing so because they gave him an extension without so much as a sniff of a coaching search looking at other options. And an ownership group that looks the other way when front office falls short time and time and time again. Keep the fans wanting more. Finish second place. Well, we only want to be a luxury tax team if we're really contending, though. It's such a bald-faced hypocrisy. And it's frustrating. Really, truly is. So, long answer short about that question about where the Bulls would be right now if they hadn't traded Jimmy and just signed him to the Supermax, they'd be in a more competitive spot than they are now. They'd be in a better spot than they are now, sadly. But would the Bulls be willing to pay the luxury tax to actually try building around Jimmy with proper pieces that cost money? Or would they slap together a budget, bad team around Jimmy? And would we be watching him drag a bunch of corpses to the 8 seed in the first round exit for the past 3 years? I think we all know what the more likely answer is. But appreciate the question. It's a good one. That's it for today. Sorry we didn't get to more, but these were all really good questions that I wanted to flesh out as much as possible. So hopefully we will get to some more mailbag content later in this holiday week, a few more text messages, hopefully some voicemails as well. Hopefully Jordan and I will be on the mics at some point tomorrow's episode or later in the week. I think we'll probably take Christmas Day off, just to let y'all know, and enjoy some time watching NBA games that don't involve our Bulls, because as of right now, guess what? Those are more entertaining NBA games to watch. But I hope all of you out there have an amazing start to your holiday week. Have a great Monday night. Enjoy Bulls and Magic tonight. Hopefully, we see the Bulls get their first three-game winning streak tonight. Wouldn't that be something? First three-game winning streak of the season, and it's December 23rd. Wow. Good times. Good times, Bulls fans. As I said before to a couple of those texters letting us know about their listens this season, we appreciate that, and that message goes to all of you out there. We appreciate all of our dedicated listeners to the Locked On Bulls podcast. We do it for you, our fellow Bulls fans. We love y'all. We appreciate y'all. And we hope all of you have a wonderful holiday week coming up. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Peace out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com